Hey, before you hang up, say this. Sure. This is Steve Pavlina, and you're listening to Vroom Vroom Veer.
Do you want me to say it like that?
You say it. Say it how Steve says it.
Okay. This is Steve Pavlina, and you are listening to Vroom Vroom Veer.
Perfect.
Good. There
Thanks,
you go.
Brother. Later.
Okay. All right. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Are you ready to thoughtfully steer away from your revved up, frenzied, and far too often scripted life? Then welcome to Vroom Vroom Veer with Jeff Smith, where he guides you down the road differently traveled by sharing unique experiences with guests who have managed to shift away from a life stuck on cruise control and veered their way into a more authentic and fulfilling one in all sorts of interesting and kind of remarkable ways. Get ready to Vroom Vroom Veer with your differently traveled road chauffeur, Jeff Smith.
Dan Erickson, thank you so much for being on Vroom Vroom Veer, and welcome back to the show.
All right. Thank you, Jeff. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, and it's great to talk to you again. You are my your first episode, and you know I'm not keeping track of episode numbers, but I will link to it in the show notes. Your first episode way back when, I don't remember the number or the date-ish, you know, it was about, you know, a year-ish ago, right?
I think it was about a year ago.
About a year
almost exactly.
Ago. Oh, really? Look at you.
I don't know about exactly. Close.
Really close to exactly a year ago. Right. So it's a year-ish ago. You were the number one downloaded show, and I have a theory that I want to share with you.
All right. Well, that's great to know, first of all, but let's hear your theory.
Okay. So... you know how what they say about word of mouth, right?
Yeah.
It's the best sort of marketing, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm guessing that you probably told your students maybe that, hey, I'm on a podcast.
Actually, I didn't.
Oh, okay.
No, I don't, you know, I try not to do too
cross
much
that.
Self-promotion with my students. I kind of keep it separate. So I didn't do that.
Okay.
So that's why it amazes me that it's been the most downloaded podcast.
I know. And you just asked me, you know, like, oh, you've been booking people with more Twitter followers than me. And so is that still standing? I'm like, as far as I haven't checked in a while, but I'm pretty sure your show had the most downloads. If it doesn't still, it did for the longest time.
You know,
and I'll be honest, I kind of quit checking. I was like, meh, whatever.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe it's the topic. You know, I think cults are kind of intriguing.
It was a really fun show. You know, I enjoyed talking to you. I think it was, you know, very, there was a good flow. It was very conversational. Obviously, we got into it, you know, and it was real and raw on your part, you know, and I kind of just tried to hang, you know. But I thought it was a really good show. So, you know, hey, who knows? So... for those folks out there that didn't listen to the first show yet, but they will go back and check it out, let's just sum up. So you are at your main website is hipdigs.com. Now that might be your only one now, right?
I still have the danerickson.net too, okay. But yeah, hipdigs.com is the one I've focused on for a little over a year now, about a year and a half.
Right. And that's where you mostly just talk about the simple life or simple living.
Simple living, healthy habits, you know, trying to declutter, live with less, downsize, those kinds of topics. Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll get into more of that whole because that's a big thing that I'm really into too. Not so much as you, but I like your term moderate minimalist. You know, you don't take it to the extreme. So
no,
I'm with you on that. Yeah. But let's go and talk about. Because you've got a trilogy of books, right? And
right.
The latest one is, let me find it here. Well, you know.
It's the track to redemption.
The track to redemption. I had the page up and then it went away. Oh, I went back to your about page. That's what I did. Okay. The track to redemption. So is that out now? Is it officially launched already?
It is. I haven't really done the whole launch thing. I just, okay, I got it done.
I
go and create space. I self-publish it. It goes on Amazon. I've kind of done it quietly, and maybe I don't get as many buyers that way. I don't know. But that's just the way I've kind of done these three books.
No, I got it. So book one, let's just walk through.
Sure.
Because it's sort of like summarizes your life in a life chronology, kind of like what we did in the first show, but we don't have to get it all that in depth because we've already covered most of that stuff, right?
Right.
Right.
Sure.
So book one is, go ahead.
Book one is called The Track to Redemption. Now, the trilogy is actually, it's considered fictional, but the first book is really based off of my own story. As a child, my parents moved across the country, got us involved in a cult, and I was in it for 6 years of my childhood, 10 to 16 age. So that, you know, I changed names, I changed the name of places, I might have taken a little creative license from time to time, but generally that first book is based on my own life and a true story.
Right. And like I said, we get into that. We really go in depth about what that whole scene was like.
Right.
Right. In the first show. So if that is intriguing to find out just what that's like growing up in a cult and basically living from 10 to 16. Yeah. So you're just kind of like almost like a prisoner / slave. So, and the conversation is fascinating, but I don't want to retread it. So,
right.
Okay.
Yeah, they can go listen to the other podcast.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Right.
Keep making it, build those numbers, you know,
there so you go.
Stay on top.
There you go. You want to keep that one rolling. There you
go. That's right. And maybe this one will do as well.
There you go. So, and then the second book is called, this is the At the Crossing of Justice and Mercy. I found the page again. Yay. So where does that pick up in the story of your life?
You know, it's interesting. Originally, I was just going to write one book. And one day, my older brother calls me and he said, you know, the leader of that cult that I was in as a kid has, as far as we know, he passed away quite a few years ago.
Okay.
And my brother called me and he says, you know, I found some information online and I think he might still be alive.
Oh, geez. Right.
Now, and that triggered this idea in my head. I'm like, wow, what if that I wrote a second book and started working toward a trilogy, and the premise being 20 years later. So the author of the narrator of the first book, his name is Andy Burden, is in his mid-20s in the first book when he narrates and goes back to his childhood.
Right.
So in the second book, it's like 20 years later, and he gets this message from his brother that the cult leader might still be alive after they thought he was dead.
Right.
And so the second book is way more fictional. It's this idea that Andy Burden goes out in search of the cult leader. So it's kind of a mystery. He's going out to see if he's really alive and if he can find him. Now,
do that in real life, right?
No, I didn't.
Right, right.
But there is still a lot of reality mixed into that book. For instance, I had been dealing with a divorce. So in that book, the main character's dealing with going through or getting over a divorce.
Right.
So that's mixed in. So there's a lot of reality mixed in, but the major premise of the book was fictional on that one.
And in your real life, you did go through that, but you didn't go on the same exact journey.
Right. I didn't travel. I did it all, you know, just
you just
researching.
Wanted to figure it out. Right.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. So now we're up to book three, The Track to Redemption. Okay. And so where does this pick up the story?
Well, I can't tell you too much or I might give away some of book two.
Okay. All right.
But in book three, I tried something creative and there are actually two narrators. So Andy Burden continues to tell his side of the story, but I allow the cult leader, Peter Smith is his name in the books.
Okay.
And he gets to tell his side of the story.
Oh, wow.
So you get to hear both from the side of the story from the protagonist and the antagonist. Now,
that is kind of interesting. As far as literary devices go, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it was fun. Yeah. And as the story goes on, some things begin to change in the antagonist's perspective on things.
Okay.
You might say he begins to be more aware of some things about himself and about his spiritual journey up to that point in his life. You know, the whole series has a spiritual journey involved
right.
in it too,
right.
From a Christian perspective, but not a, you know, kind of a, you know, mild Christian perspective.
Right.
It's not, you know, beat you over the head with, you know, Christian religion.
Sure, sure. Wow. Okay. So, but it's basic, it's gotta be set a little bit ahead of the events of book two.
Yes.
Okay.
It's about a year later.
Oh, okay.
So a year or two after book two finishes. So the first book, you know, is 25 years ago. The
right.
second book is, you know, then moves up 25 years. The third book just moves up another year or two.
Gotcha. Okay. It sounds fascinating. Now I want to read them all.
it's available.
It's available, right.
All three books are available paperback
right.
At Amazon, mm-hmm. and they're all three available in Kindle.
Okay.
Now I did all the formatting and you know that myself, and there may be a couple little glitches, but it's
sure.
very, very readable.
Right.
I had it professionally edited,
really?
All three.
Wow.
Well, kind of. A colleague at work who used to be a journalist who teaches English.
Hey, that's pretty darn professional.
Yeah. He did the editing for me, and he said the third book is definitely the best of the three.
Okay.
So,
wow.
I think that's saying something for that third story.
Yeah, no kidding. Wow.
So, and
maybe
they're
just
all
kind of like you kind of like got to love the process a little bit more.
I think, but I also spent way more time on the third book.
Mm.
I mean, the first book came out in 2012, second book was 2013. It's 3 years later now. They're
right.
both in the spring. So,
right.
I spent longer time writing the story,
mm-hmm.
and my editor spent a longer time editing it, and then I spent a longer time on the rewrite. And at first I thought, gosh, this is taking too long, but I kind of decided I liked that slower pace,
mm-hmm.
because I think it allows time to think about the story and consider whether you're on the right track or you need to make some changes.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's for the better that I took the time doing it.
Yeah, and you get I was thinking to myself, the first book you were kind of tied to reality a lot more than the second and the third book.
Yes, absolutely. Although it was
a fictionalized reality.
Right, and it was
right.
a pretty easy reality story to tell and
right.
and make you know, kind of interesting and exciting, because you know, it's a kid in a cult.
I know. Yeah. yeah.
You don't hear about that every day.
No. Yeah. No. I'm sure there's plenty of kids in cults, and that's sad, but geez. Yeah, you don't hear about it. That's so awful.
Yeah, a lot of them
right.
don't write their stories because I think some of the after effects, as we talked a lot about in the last show, you know, some of the after effects of being in a cult can kind of, you know, mess
oh,
yeah. you up
oh, yeah.
for life.
Right,
so,
right. Yeah, and we talked about this in the last show, that like after you got out of the cult, you were probably, you would be classified now as a sufferer of PTSD. Probably.
Yeah, maybe not immediately. I think that was maybe a little bit of a effect that was delayed.
Right.
But yes.
I mean,
absolutely.
There was this traumatic event, and it was in your formative years. So, I mean, less happened to, you know, lots of people and required therapy for years and years and years. And we talked about that. You never had any of that.
Right. No,
so these books were kind of like your therapy for you.
Absolutely. It was,
right.
it was and is therapy. You know, all the writing I do is therapeutical in one way or another.
Right.
So back to the third book a little bit, though. It's on Kindle. It's on paperback. And also there's a guy, Bill Cooper, who has done the audio books for the first two.
Right.
He's going to be working on the third. It may be a little while before that's done. He's got some other work ahead of that.
But you want to keep the same guy, so there's the continuity of the voice. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's a veteran of radio. He worked in radio for years, and then he retired and decided to start doing audiobooks.
Yeah.
So he's got a great voice, does a great job on the stories.
And he does all the different characters?
Yes, he does. I don't know if he really uses his voice in a character format. He's more of a reading than it is, you know, putting his voice into different characters. But he, you know, in the second book, there's some Southern accent in there, some Southern drawl, and he does it.
Right.
So he does some character work. Yeah. So, you know, in the third book, you know, another thing I should point out is there's also a theme in there about, you know, which has to do with cults in general and about isolation and how we as human beings deal with isolation, being stuck somewhere all by yourself with no way out.
Mm.
So that's a theme that's in there. And then, you know, it is kind of an adventure because or an action, I should almost say. There's an adventure to it, and this one's got more action because there's a group of Andy Burden's friends that need to take some action to help make sure that everything ends okay.
Mm. You know, that makes, when you talk about the theme of isolation, it makes me think of two things. First, I had a PhD on my show. Her name was Loretta Bruning. And she talks about brain chemistry and how we're still mammals. So she looks at other mammal behavior. Let's not call them lower because that's superior. Other mammal behavior, like say herd animals, right? And we're kind of humans are still have that herd mentality. And she talks a lot about, let's say you're a gazelle. Right. And you're in your herd and the herd is safety, but it's also like, oh, I'm so tired of those assholes. They're always, you know, like picking on me. Right. So there's this constant pressure between, oh, look, there's good, really nice grass, but it's kind of on the edge of where I should be going to. I want to go over there, but I'll probably get eaten. Right? So this thing about being isolated from the group or the herd, that is huge. I mean, and we don't even kind of like consciously, you know, we don't think about it in words. That part of our brain isn't feeling it. It's the older part of our brain, the mammal part of our brain, is when we're alone, we just feel like we're going to die.
Yeah. Well,
we can't not. Yeah.
And another thing I think that happens when we're alone is we can be, you know, if we can get there, if we can get that past that point of thinking we're going to die, I think we're able to really sort through things from our past, things about ourselves that we dislike.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and that's kind of, you know, where this goes is there's some, you know,
the soul searching.
Yeah. Exactly.
You're looking for the buried treasure.
Right.
Yeah, inside of you, right?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, right.
Because it's there. You know, there's something there, and
right.
That's one way of finding it is to, you know, not purposely go into isolation, but if you're thrown into isolation, well, you have to deal with it.
You've got to do something.
Yeah.
The other thing I thought of was I'm reading this really good book called The 48 Laws of Power. It's basically the rule book for evil.
Yeah, I've seen that book. I've never read it, but I've seen it.
It's a really, really good read. It's very Machiavellian.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all these different laws, and then it's 48 laws, right? And then he uses historical examples of you know, the principle of the law and then transgressions of the law and enforcing the law, observances, you know, like this is when it worked. This is when somebody used it to their advantage. And this is when somebody wasn't aware of it and ran afoul of this law, right? And one of those is, you know, sure, you can just go slaughter your enemies, right? But then everybody's going to be, you know, look at that asshole. He just slaughtered all of his enemies.
Right. And then they're going to get slaughtered.
Right. You'll end up getting slaughtered yourself, right?
Yeah.
The more subtle way would be to isolate your enemies very subtly.
Yeah.
Because if you isolate them, you know, and you kind of like make them go away, then, you know, you've taken their power away. So, yeah, that was the other thing that I thought of when you brought up the theme of isolation.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah. So, the track to redemption. So, where does the redemption theme come in? Who's getting redeemed? I can't say
there. Yeah, that might give too much away.
Right. But yeah, you can't.
I would say there are several people getting redeemed, or at least a couple people getting redeemed. So there's not necessarily just one person being redeemed.
It's an overall theme of redemption.
There is an overall theme.
Sure. This seems like just like it would be a blast. So, right. So, well, let's catch up. I mean, other than the book, what's going on Hip Digs these days? What are you spending most of your time blogging about?
Well, you know, Hip Digs is a site about simple living, and right. You know, there are articles from everything about decluttering to using less media to I also like to put in articles about some food and exercising, things like that, good habits, healthy habits. So that's pretty much what I'm doing right now. Is I've got about two to three articles a week coming out on that. My intention has been and still is to create some kind of program, online course.
Oh, okay.
That people could take to begin, you know, to have a plan to how for decluttering their homes, their lives. Mm-hmm. And building healthy habits instead of the negative ones that create all the clutter.
Right.
That said, doing too much creates the clutter.
right.
So
you have to follow your own rules.
Right. So right. I question myself now because I've been planning on doing this. Originally, I was going to try to set this program up for the beginning of this year.
Right.
And then I said, well, it's going to be the beginning of 2017. And now I'm saying, well, gee. You know, I'm still trying to write some books. I still got some music projects. I've got a job as a college instructor. You know, I'm a full-time dad.
You got a pretty full plate.
I got a full plate. And so right. if I take the time and energy to start an online course program,
right.
I'm getting closer and closer going against what I'm preaching.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, no, so, right. Good for you. Way to figure that out.
So I'm questioning whether that's going to happen or not.
Right.
It may be just shuffling some things around to make it happen.
Yeah.
Deciding what's priority. Is another writing another fictional book priority, or is creating an online program? You know, of course, they're either could have a little bit of profit. You know, it's deciding what is important to me.
What's more important?
Now, one thing that happened that's interesting with Hip Digs is I was just contacted just a few days ago by an app maker. He had just made an app recently for the Zen Habits blog.
Leo.
Leo. And he contacted me. He says, I'd like to make an app for you.
Okay.
Which I thought was pretty cool. And so we're actually right now in the process of developing that app for Hip Digs.
I like it.
It's going to be very simple. And the way Hip Digs is set up, you only see one post at a time. And I did it that way on purpose. I want people to focus on that page. It's real clean and simple.
Right.
But the app will allow people to see, you know, several posts, and then, or, you know, the link to several posts, at least, yeah, the title and the first little bit of the post, and then you can click on that. So it'll allow that, and there's going to be some other, it's going to be a slow process. He's going to, you know, the app maker is going to start out with a simple 1.0, and then he's going to add some things, and so that might kind of prompt me. Yeah. Well, I don't know if it's going to take much of my time, but it might prompt me to focus a little more on HipDigs because, you know, if there's an app out there too, you know, that might be bringing in more followers and getting more people involved in the community.
So I remember last time we talked about TV and cutting off internet and
That's right. I was off the internet for the summer last time we talked.
You were off the internet for the summer. Yeah. And I love that. I thought that was a really good idea. So if you wanted to get internet at all, you had to go to the library or Starbucks or something.
Pretty much.
And that's why we had to do it over the phone.
we did. I was at my work.
Right.
And I couldn't. For some reason, I couldn't get Skype to work at work. I don't know what it was. Yeah, so we did the phone interview.
Yeah.
And it's still the most listened to of your bunch.
That's right.
It's the most lower quality.
Yeah. Well, that's fine. You know, the quality of the audio is secondary to the quality of the conversation. So I think that's probably what it was. But no, let's talk a little bit because one of the guys that I follow on the internet is Steve Pavlina. I don't know if you've ever heard him, but he's got a website too. And he calls this idea media fasting, where you kind of like what you did with your internet, right? You just like pick a period of time like the summer and just not do that, right? And he did that in his life with like saying, I'm not going to watch any commercials on TV. So if I'm going to watch TV, it'll have to be commercial free and it'll have to be something that kind of like anything on Netflix would be automatically okay.
Right.
What wouldn't be okay would be to watch like a live TV show on cable, because then you're just subjecting yourself to all that advertising. And in his mind, that was just like messing with his brain. Where are you on this? Do you have an opinion on any of that?
I'm not a big fan of advertising, which is interesting because I teach communication, you know, so that's okay. One of the things I teach from time to time.
Right.
But you know, advertising is interesting because every advertisement we see, hear, or read is basically telling us that we have a problem. Right. There's something wrong with us.
Right.
And in order to fix that problem, we have to purchase the product being advertised.
Right. Right.
And so it's a very consumeristic mentality. So I'm not a big fan of advertising. I try to avoid it most of the time.
Right.
Traditionally, I haven't watched a lot of TV over the last 20 years. Okay. I will admit, though, you know, I have a daughter. She's getting a little older. And I'll admit about a year ago, we added Netflix and, you know, I started watching a few old series as I liked, and I started watching some shows about tiny houses and, you know, some music documentaries. So
stuff on Netflix.
There is. And so the last 6 months to a year, I've probably watched more TV than I had in the last 5 years prior to that.
Wow.
I'm still only watching an hour or so a day.
Right.
But that it's way more than I had, but it is mostly Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily to avoid the advertisements, but I just find stuff I like, you know, and I do like to avoid advertisements. So, I think advertising, you know, I got to wonder, what does this do to our psyche?
Yeah.
Being told over and over and over that we're not good enough.
Right.
We don't have what it takes. We don't have the right stuff.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's consumer training, like you were talking about before.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And that's the insidious part to me is that I'll tell a story to tell a story. When I retired from the Air Force, I went to sign up for VA medical. And I don't use the VA all that often because, you know, my wife has a job and she's got really good medical. But on occasion, I have accessed the VA system because I'm pretty close to it here. It's like 10, 15 miles away, not that far, LA-wise anyway. And I went in there, and they kind of like just had me come in for a how you doing, welcome to the system thing. Mm-hmm. And she was going over all the things in my medical record and, you know, saying like, oh, I see you have arthritis in your knees. What are you taking for that? You know, and I kind of gave her this look. I'm like, you know, it doesn't hurt so much. I'm not marching anymore, so I'm not really taking anything. And she's like, well, what did you take when you were when it hurt really bad? And I was like, you know, maybe Advil and beer. You know? But she was just totally like taken aback that I wasn't on any prescription medication.
I do my best to do the same.
Yeah. I mean, I want to do that as a, you know, very, you know, like I want to take these antibiotics to kill this thing and then I'm done, you know?
Yep.
That's about as far as I want to go. Whereas my wife, I mean, we just found out that she's probably addicted to this stuff called Fioricet. I mean, most people have never heard of Fioricet, but no. I just found out that it's kind of a well-known addictive thing. It's for migraine, right?
Okay, yeah.
Don't know if it's the substance or the behavior that you get hooked on. But what they do is they tell you to take the pill before you have the headache.
How do you know?
Well, you have to. That's the training. That's what I'm talking about. Is like they teach you to learn your triggers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. I know. You're already going,
Well, you know, I had migraines as a kid.
Right.
When I was a kid, I used to have, from about the time of 8, I started getting migraines. They were horrible. Yeah. They came on, they were intense headaches, and I'd wind up getting nauseous and I'd throw up.
Right.
And it was horrible. And as I got older, I got them less and less and less and less and less often. And so now I still get headaches.
Right.
But not migraines. And every once in a while, though, I think the last one was about 4 or 5 years ago, I'll still get a migraine. And I can't necessarily tell the difference between a tension headache and a migraine headache. So I don't know if I could, you know, I'd be taking those things all the time. I'm getting the tension, you know, I'm getting the headache.
Right, yeah. Right. Well, yeah, that's the thing. It's like, you're right. And I can't say because I'm not the person getting a headache. All I know is she was popping this pill quite often.
Yeah.
No. And you know, just as a precautionary, you know, I don't want to get a headache. I know I'm going to do this, so I'll take this, right?
Right.
But what was really happening was it was an addiction to me because she kind of like felt like she's got this feeling in her body like, this is what it feels like right before I need to take a pill, right? That's not what she was telling herself, but that's what she was trained to do. I think
you got to wonder, and this is, we're on a tangent here.
That's good. I love tangents.
Sometimes you got to wonder if the pharmaceutical companies plan some of this. I don't want to get anybody mad at me, but
don't
want to make any waves.
That's kind of the point that I was bringing it up is, and it's not just, this is, I'm using this story as an example, right?
Right. For consumerism in general,
you know, and you can, and it goes into the whole pharmaceutical, but it's everything. It's
absolutely
really everything. Every problem that you have should be solved by something you buy.
You know, and I think if we really did some deep soul searching, we'd find that 99% of the problems that we have are probably solved by not buying anything.
Right.
You know, I mean, yes, some problems are solved by buying stuff. You know, your car blows up and you need to get to work. You're going to have to buy a car.
Right.
Your computer burns out and crashes. You know, you might need a new computer. But, you know, a lot of the things we buy, we don't really need.
No. And we can get this tangent because and move on and just talk about. How I know, I don't know when, but I know recent, I don't know when, I'll have to think about that. But at some point I realized that I kind of saw that what people, call that retail therapy thing.
Where
you go through that whole, like, we get addicted to buying shit.
Yeah, we do. Absolutely. Right. It's, you know, I don't do it as much as I used to, but I can remember times where, you know, a friend of mine once was, you know, getting into outdoor lightweight backpacking, you know, several day trips, you know, and he started turning me on to some of these, you know, pretty expensive clothes that you get at places like REI and that level, you know, and so I started buying some of that stuff, and I found myself on the internet, you know, just, oh, I got to get this to match that, and I got to get the boots, and I need a lightweight tent, and I need this. Right. And
I want to get the new gadget, yeah.
Right, and I realized after a while, I'm not going to use half this stuff.
Right, right.
You know, and the same thing's happened with clothing once in a while, you know. It's been years since I've done that, too, but you go out and you buy one pair of new pants, you're like, well, now I need a new shirt to go with that. Yeah. Well, now I need some new shoes, and then before you know it, you're buying stuff just to buy it.
Yeah,
there's no purpose anymore.
You're just, and this again can go back to that the PhD lady who talks about brain chemistry and mammals, mammalian behavior. But you don't really need to know anything about other mammals. You just need to know that shopping, even if you do it online, that's a lot like hunting and or gathering. So you get a tiny little dopamine hit every time you see a new image.
Yeah.
On Amazon or flipping through your phone, and you're like, you know, oh, I want to look at some new shoes, right?
Yeah.
If you're into shoes, right? Dopamine hit. Dopamine hit, right? Yeah. And then going and buying the thing, that's a whole nother thing. That's like serotonin and
blah, 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 right. Or getting it in the mail, right?
Right, right.
Here it comes. Exactly. Ooh, wow.
Yes, and you have that little Christmas unboxing thing.
Yeah, and you know, what's interesting, you know, you point out the hunting and gathering is, you know, we're so disconnected from our original roles, you know, when we get adrenaline rushes and dopamine and serotonin and all these things, you know, we sit more and we, you know, and so these are unhealthy things we're replacing for our old traditional roles.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, we're out hunting and gathering. At least
we're outside.
We're getting exercise. Right. We're, you know, it's a thrill, you know, and now we're sitting at our computer going, ooh, those shoes are cool.
Right.
I'm going to get those. And then we get to the post office. Wow. I got the box, and we open it up, but we're still not, we're not active in the same way.
And, you know, I also found out that staring at a screen and putting your focus on just a tiny little area, that also gives you low dosage of cortisol over time.
Yeah,
it gives you that anxiety feeling.
Yeah, I heard it depletes your serotonin, too.
That, too. Yes.
The blue screen will actually deplete your serotonin. So if you're on your computer for an hour or two right before you go to bed, you're less likely to sleep well.
Right. Yes. Yes.
And that's when most people get on their computers, I think. You know? Right.
Well, you know, my job now is I'm doing like IT, computer stuff for Inglewood School District, you know, and doing IT work. I mean, most of it is, you know, click, click, progress bar, right?
Right. You're on the computer all day long.
Yeah. You know, and so I wasn't too far into it that I realized I had to make I'm not going to stare at progress bars rule, right? Because, I can't get up. I can't really go do another thing, but I don't have to look at that progress bar all the time because I know it's going to be a while. I can get up, I can walk around, I can look around, I can look at the teacher, I can look at kids, I can look at the walls. There's all kinds of things to look at and not focus on that progress bar because it was just driving me nuts.
Yeah, yeah, I know. When you do updates on your computer, it's similar. Is it ready yet? Is it ready yet? Yeah.
So let's pull it back now and get back to a little bit of the hip digs scenario. And I was curious to ask you, are you thinking about going solar at all?
You know, right now I think it's out of my budget.
Right. Mainly. Yeah, me too.
So Actually, I just, you know, I bought a house a couple years ago, a, you know, moderate sized house. It's about 1,200-ish square feet.
That's about right. Yeah.
And I'd like smaller, actually, but in the town I'm in, to get smaller, you're not necessarily in the best part of town. So
understood.
Yeah. So recently, the heater and the air conditioner in here were pretty old.
Yeah.
So I just had them replaced. And, you know, I looked into solar and I just thought, you know, it's like a $20,000 or $30,000, wow, you know, investment.
Yeah.
And, you know, it may pay off. It may pay for itself, but I just, I couldn't go there, at least not right now.
Yeah.
In the future, I'd like to actually have a little smaller house and maybe have solar and, and have some self-sustaining qualities.
Well, you know, the I just looked at, and this is shopping, so hey, we're breaking the rule, but I've been fascinated with the whole battery. Why doesn't my house have a battery? And then Elon Musk comes up with this. Have you heard of this? This, what's the name of his company? Oh, the Tesla wall.
Right. He does. I know he does Tesla.
The wall is basically a battery unit that I think it's going to retail for like $5,000 per house. And it's a lithium battery.
Right.
Like the kind that they put in his cars. And then you connect that to a solar, right? And and then it'll have all these huge upsides, right? Like you can plug it into the grid. So then even if you don't have solar, which most people would if they're going to, you know, spring the $5,000 for the battery. But if you didn't, you could charge it overnight when your electric bill or your electricity provider has off-peak hours, so the cheapest the cheapest amount of electricity is going to trickle in and keep your battery charged.
That's good. Great.
So and then if power goes out, like for and that happened to me last year, somebody crashed into a power line and my whole block was like out for probably 14-16 hours, you know, and that's nothing, you know, it's no big deal.
Nothing. Yeah, unless it's 110 degrees out,
then it would have been a something, but it wasn't. It was fine. But it made me think, you know, wouldn't it be cool, you know, to have a backup? So I started researching, and the coolest thing I found, because I'm in a townhouse, so the whole $30,000 solar install is not really a viable option for me either, because the HOA doesn't let you penetrate the roof of the house. So, so I can't really do that.
So batteries would be a good option. I have a younger brother and he's been interested in boats, sailboats.
Okay.
And so he bought himself a whole bunch. He wants boats that are, he's got a little boat and he bought a bunch of batteries because he wants it all to be electric motor. And he got some solar panels to hook up the same idea that he could put on the top of the boat. And so he's been interested in that, and he's recently bought a bigger boat that's already all rigged up with all battery-based power.
That's awesome.
You know, those lithium batteries.
Right. Yeah, I saw on YouTube this couple that's living out in their RV, and they have a solar system with a lithium battery in their RV. And they got so much power out of these lithium batteries, they were able to run their AC.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I was like, what?
Now you have to recharge them, though.
Well, they weren't even while they were doing their experiment, they had so much solar energy coming in from their panels.
So they were just charging with solar,
It was running the AC off of the battery, but the flow in from the panels was, you know, keeping up.
Yeah, and that's great.
Yeah,
so hip digs, you know, I might start getting into that kind of stuff a little bit. You know, right now I've just been focusing on, you know, more common sense, practical, everyday things that we could do to simplify. Yeah. But I always have had that interest in solar, battery, power.
It's the future. You know,
I think it is too.
Yeah,
I definitely think it is.
And I always like to think I want to be ready in an emergency. And then these things are like, there's this neat thing about, yeah, being simple and being like green, but there's also like zombies coming, right?
Well, you know, it's funny. I have a friend who has started his own blog, and I think it's called planetprep.net. He's kind of out there, you know, and that's what it's about. It's about, you know,
when the zombies come, you have to be
when
ready.
The zombies come, or not quite zombies, but, you know, he looks at all this UFOs and zombies and being prepared.
Sure.
You know, that's why it's Planet Prep. And so you know, talk to me, and we're trying to figure out, and I haven't done it yet, but how could I write an article about minimalism on a prep site? Because preppers tend to sometimes do the opposite of minimalism.
Right.
You know,
I think it's kind of not a good idea.
No, I think there's got to be a happy medium and a way to be prepped minimally.
Right.
You know, a minimalist prep for the worst that could happen. You know, I have a post on HipDigs, and I think it's called 9 Things Minimalists Shouldn't Get Caught Without. Because I think sometimes, you know, I don't have a hammer, I don't have a screwdriver, I don't have a flashlight. You know, what?
Yeah, you want all of those things.
You know,
a multi-tool would be really awesome.
Right. So if you take minimalism too far, you know, and you have an emergency, you might find yourself in trouble.
Right. Yeah, there's a whole other group of minimalists that wanted to have like a certain number of items, right?
Yeah.
And then another group that, well, we'll only carry something that'll fit in this backpack.
Yeah. And that's sometimes
they're just made up rules, you know.
They are, and there's too many rules, and sometimes I shy away from even calling myself a minimalist because I feel like it's a box, it's a label, and it's now I have to only own so much, and I can only have a certain kind of car, and I can't have a house over a certain amount of square feet. Yeah. And when people find out that I have more than the rules say, then I'm a phony.
Yeah.
You know,
I get it. Yeah, that's the problem with labels.
Yeah,
it's like then you're see, look, we just brought it back around because you inadvertently join a herd you're not really wanting to identify with.
Pretty much.
Yeah, exactly. No, I get it. That makes sense. All right. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about habits. What's your take on? Are you in the Leo camp of making it as simple as possible when you come to like say new habits?
I think new habits should be simple, but I think the hardest part about creating new and healthy habits is consistency and making it a habit.
Right.
And that's also the hardest part, I think, about overcoming bad habits.
Okay.
You know, the bad habits, if we resist bad habits, it doesn't work because when you resist, you're thinking about it all the time.
Right.
And so therefore you keep going back to it. Mm. You know, I'm not going to do that. I just did that. Right. So the key, I think, is rather than resist to, replace.
That was exactly what I was going to say.
That's hard.
It is. It's really hard.
It's hard for everybody. Even Leo and all the people that practice this stuff, if they're honest, they're going to tell you the same thing. Look, this wasn't easy.
Right.
I didn't just wake up one morning and become a marathon runner and give up smoking and write 3 books and give up drinking. It's
hard.
It took time.
Yeah. You know that when I did one of Leo's habit courses.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I did.
I've thought about it. I haven't tried yet.
It was really good because before I did it, I didn't floss.
And
so he said the first thing you should do is pick something so simple, and you should have an existing trigger. So he was like, this is just a generic suggestion. He was like, you always brush your teeth. You probably always brush your teeth every day, same time, same place. Just add flossing, right?
Yeah.
You know, you're already brushing your teeth. Just come up with some little tricks about, you know, putting floss out before you go to bed. It'll be there. Put it right next to your toothbrush.
Yeah,
right?
You know.
And it only took about a month, and I was hooked.
Yeah, I did the same thing. Only, you know, my dentist kept telling me as I'm getting older, you know, you really need to floss. You're going to have gum loss and gum disease. Right. And I think it must probably going on 5-6 years ago now. I just started doing it.
Right.
You know, and now it's a habit.
Yeah.
I may skip a day now and then. You know, I'm in a hurry today. I'll just brush.
Yeah.
But in general, it's a habit.
You were right though. That is an easy example.
Absolutely. Yeah.
When nicotine was and is still like the worst thing ever to get on and to get off, I think, in my experience. Because I mean, when I got off of nicotine, I stayed on the Nicorette gum way too long.
Yeah,
right. Go ahead.
I never tried the Nicorette gum. I smoked when I was younger a little bit, for me, I did it cold turkey, but then a couple years later, I fell off the wagon for a while, and you know, so. But yeah, it is. It's an addictive thing.
It's really hard.
Alcohol is the same way. If for people who abuse alcohol or any drug, you know, it's all tough stuff to deal with.
Have you ever heard of kombucha?
I have. It's a tea, isn't it?
It's a fermented tea.
Yes.
But, you know, because it's fermented, it has a trace, what they call quote unquote trace amount of alcohol in it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not sold as alcohol because this whatever this trace is low enough to be below the threshold to be called an alcoholic drink.
Right.
So you're not going to get drunk in any measure of the word drinking kombucha. But it helped immensely me on my – I did a 45-day trial of no alcohol. Now, after that, I went a little bit longer because I was using kombucha as my replacement.
Right.
And kombucha with that trace amount of alcohol turned out to be an amazing sort of like methadone style of replacement, you know?
Uh-huh.
It was more or less innocuous. It's really healthy for you. It's fizzy. It's kind of bittery, soury, and it kind of reminds me of drinking beer without drinking beer.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah.
So it worked great for me. Now, I'm back to drinking. I just drink a lot less. I try to keep it down to like, you know, just the weekends in a moderate amount of, you know, we go out and I have one or two, you know.
Right.
But, you know, I wanted to use the experiment of the 45-day thing just to detox.
Right. That's great.
Yeah. And that worked great.
When I was younger, I drank too much and I quit all my, not all my bad habits, but you know, all those
boys.
Kinds of bad habits on the same day.
It
was July 31st, 1993.
Wow.
You know, and I quit everything.
Wow.
Except coffee, but that came a little. Although coffee's not that bad, right?
Right.
But
it can be.
So it can be. So and I actually gave that up a little later. But then over the years, I started. Well, you know what? I think I can have a glass of wine once in a while.
Sure.
Or a beer once in a while. Now I think I can start drinking a coffee and tea again. And so when I started again, I set some limits. You know, yeah, I guess it goes back to that minimalism rule, but so I never drink more than I don't drink hard alcohol, and I never drink more than one glass or two glasses of wine or two beers in one sitting.
That's
usually it's just one.
Yeah.
So it works good for me. It's social, and you know, I like to, you know, I got some Irish Death in my refrigerator right now, so I like an occasional dark lager style beer. It's a local brewery here that
Irish
makes,
Death.
Irish Death.
That sounds
it's a
awesome.
Sweet, it's a sweet dark beer. It's one of the best I've had of that kind.
Wow. Now I'm going to have to go find that.
Yeah, I don't know if they ship it down there or
maybe
not.
Maybe not.
They might.
Well, you know, I'm a big fan. I know this is kind of a bandwagon thing, but I like IPA and hoppy beer.
Yep, they're good too.
Yeah. I mean, that it's kind of a bandwagon thing. It just was the one that I, you know, liked most frequently. Now I do mix it up though. I'll put in a sweeter beer, like have you ever had Arrogant Bastard?
I think I've tried it once. Yeah,
it's not super sweet, but it's also not. It's not a true IPA. It's not
an, right.
Yeah, it's kind of like a hybrid almost. It's malty and bitter. Every once in a while, I'll do like a really like, what was that? Have you ever had that smoked porter by Stone?
That I don't think I have.
You might like that because it's on the sweet side.
Yeah, I like the some real white beers are good too.
Ah.
White IPAs are they're
interesting.
Yeah, they're I can't remember the name.
Now it's been somewhat, too long since I've been to the Pacific Northwest because you guys do some really interesting stuff with beer.
Yeah, beer, coffee, and facial hair.
I have a beard now, you know, so I fit in.
We do interesting stuff with those things.
I would fit in. Yeah, I would fit in. Well, hey, this has been a blast. You are at hipdigs.com. You are Dan Erickson, and your new book, The Track to Redemption, is out along with the other three in the trilogy, and that's A Train Called Forgiveness and At the Crossing of Justice and Mercy. And
that's
this
right.
has been a blast talking about minimalist and solar power and habits.
Yeah.
Wow, we were all over the place.
We were, but it's good.
No, in a good way. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody gave me a comment like a bit rambly. Yeah. And I was like, you say that like it's a bad thing. It wouldn't be me if it wasn't a little rambly.
Yeah, I think it's great.
Yeah. Thanks, Dan. This has been a blast.
Yeah. All right. Thank you for having me again, Jeff. And, DanErickson.net is my creative side.
There you go. DanErickson.net.
So I thought I'd mention that. It's where I'm putting my creative stuff, music, books, some posts about creativity. And then that's all I want to say about it, is that people can go there to see all the things I've been writing and the music that I make from time to time.
I like it.
At DanErickson.net. Since last time I talked to you, I was going to take it offline, not offline, but I was going to rebuild it, and I've rebuilt it. It's a fairly new blog again.
Okay,
so.
Cool. All right, I'm going to check that out too. So maybe is there downloadable music there?
Well, there's some links over to SoundCloud.
Okay.
And so I think you can download tracks from SoundCloud.
Yeah. We should talk about like a theme show. Maybe I could get some theme music from you.
I could probably do that.
That would be fun.
We can talk about that.
Yeah, let's talk about that offline.
Yeah, sounds good.
Talk to you later, man.
Thanks for taking the time to ride along with us on another episode of Vroom Vroom Veer. For podcast info and show notes, be sure to head over to vvveer.com. That's VVVER.com. Man, that's fun to say. And we'll catch up with you next time here on Vroom Vroom Veer.